Welcome, humans and other life forms, otherwise known as friends. This is Star Trek Discovery with Discovery Debrief. As we talk about Star Trek Discovery, Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, and more, I am your host, Cicero Holmes. I am not Chris Clow. I have taken over the captain's chair. And helping me with this brief mutiny is my personal number one good friend, Ty Monaghan. Hey, Ty.
Hey, Cicero. Always great to be here when you're on the bridge. Are you getting your groove settled back in on the chair?
Yeah. I'm rubbing my, getting the spot all settled in. Listen, if you're going to do a mutiny, you got to have a special guest star to come in to help lead the charge or take the blame. If I wanted somebody who was a charismatic patsy, there is no one better to take charge than one of the hosts of the Re-Engage podcast and our good friend, Greg Tito. Greg, welcome back. How are you?
Doing good, Cicero. Good to see you. Good to see you, Ty, again. It's been a while in our star dates pass since we've gotten to chat about Trek together, but I'm excited about this one for sure.
Yeah,
Cicero's introduction of you made it sound like you're gonna die at the end of this episode.
I was gonna say, is my shirt red?
Right.
An ambush. It could be all of the above.
Actually, a couple of our main characters wore red throughout the course of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
and they commented on it quite a lot. The episode,
breaking
of course,
down
being
stereotypes. This
yes,
show,
it
just keeps
yes.
breaking it down. Red shirts are not even red shirts anymore.
Right. That's right. The episode, of course, in question is season 5, episode 4 of Star Trek Discovery, Face the Strange, and we will get to the recap really soon. But before we do that, We want to do when people come back, we ask them how they're doing in the world of Trek, how they're re-engaging with the franchise. And there's no person better to ask that question of than Greg. Greg, how have you been engaging with the Star Trek franchise since we last saw you?
Well, I have been jumping into a lot of the modern Trek stuff over the course of the last year. I didn't watch Strange New Worlds when it was coming out. I've just kind of been on a real leisurely stroll through season 2. And I just watched the finale like a couple nights ago.
Wow.
And I'm like, man, this was really good. Wow. And I like that I didn't need to be pulled along on some journey. I was like, oh, yeah, I just feel like being with this cast for an episode or two and learning a little bit more about them. And that was super fun. And then I've been re-engaging with Star Trek The Next Generation with the aforementioned podcast Re-Engage. We are just concluded season 5. Time's Arrow is the last one that we recorded and published. Part 1. And I got to tell you, part 1 ends on a really crappy cliffhanger. And I'm not propelled into watching the premiere and jumping into season 6, but there are lots of good episodes that we're looking forward to, including the Progenitor's tech in season 6, which I was like, oh man, we haven't gotten to that one yet. They spoiled it for us here in Discovery this season.
How much of the series do you remember? The minutia of TNG do you remember before you start watching the episodes for the podcast?
Well, we're all very old who are listening, so we're in that Gen X area,
right?
And it is a constant random of like, yeah, no, I remember this, or I have a vague memory of it, because it has been a while since I've watched many of these episodes, literally since they came out. Like, I watched a few, the big ones, but it's been really great having that like 30-year break from some of these episodes and rewatching them now and being moved. The one that I recently remember was the flute one in season 6.
Oh, yes.
Picard learns to play the flute and he has that whole life.
Yes.
I remember that one being particularly moving back when I was 12 years old.
Yes.
And it holds up. It's probably even more heartbreaking watching it as an older person now, and especially the environment just continues to get worse and worse on our planet. I remember how much I was super jazzed about Green Day back in 1989, and we've only gotten worse since then. But those episodes hit really, really well, and some of them are still duds. So it's been nice to just be like, oh, I remember this. Oh, this was dated, and this was vaudevillian even for the time. There was that one with Lwaxana Troi, which I know one of your favorite characters. You've been on to talk about a Lwaxana Troi episode. Yes. But they go to like some planet with the mud bath and the the carnival of errors. It was that one did not hold up very well.
Well, I mean, you know, you take it all, you put it together, and the stew that it makes, the gumbo that is TNG is definitely better than the sum of its parts, right? So
right. And it is worth talking. That also pertains to what we were talking about before, yeah. Cicero, where in a 26 episode season, you're going to have some variance in there. Right. You're going to have super high stakes episodes. You're going to have really low stakes about whether or not Worf is a good father to Alexander.
Right.
And I miss those. I miss those in, and especially the season.
Right. And yeah, so like you said, you're going to get variance. You're going to get some filler episodes in those 26 episode seasons. What we didn't expect to get was filler episodes in a 10 episode season, but I think that the consensus was that last week's episode for this panel had the feeling of a filler episode. But Greg, back to you. How has the season been hitting you so far since this is season 5, this is it for this crew?
The finality of that I don't think I've really grappled with, but I'll try to sum this up in a meandering anecdote. my daughter is 12, she's about to turn 13, and I was watching I think the premiere of Discovery. I was like, oh, it just came out today, I'm gonna watch it, and put it on, you know, to much protest of most of my family, and they all kind of groaned and went in different areas. But my oldest stayed with me and
on CBS All Access at the time.
I was like, oh, I can watch it right now, it's brand new. I think just the newness of it attracted her. But then she was like, oh, what's this story? Who are these characters? Because, you know, she was she hasn't really watched any of Discovery with me, although we have watched a few Next Generation episodes. And she was immediately drawn in by Michael Burnham and that character. And I was like, oh, well, this is important. And I was telling her, like, that's important because of, oh, right, the spore drive. I have to explain that to you. And I had to explain, like, all of these touch points.
Right.
Oh, almost going back into these seasons. And she was like, oh, I'm really interested. Let's watch it. We should watch the show together and get, like, really into it. Because even with my little details that I was remembering, I'm like, oh, that's important because Saru, you know, used to be a prey creature, and now he's he's through that change, and he's grew, and they grew together, like all this, like little details. And they felt really like, oh, I have been on a journey with these characters, even though it does feel like at that breakneck pace and each thing is so momentous in each season, they've gone through a lot of growth, and we've seen that, and it's been really cool to experience it from her eyes. And then I'm like, this episode in particular feels like that feeling that I just described with my daughter and sharing that in microcosm. Like, that is what this entire episode is about. And I kind of dug that.
Yeah, I think so. Did I say season or did I say episode? I said episode, but I meant season. But what have you thought about
This season in particular?
So far, before this episode, going into this episode, how have your feelings on the season been?
Right. I think that is because I've been pulled along. I've enjoyed it. I've really been into it. I have found it to be off. I think the Maul and Locke characters, I don't care too much about them.
Sure.
But I've liked seeing these episodes so far. I like the introduction of this new, you know, quirky captain guy who's now got demoted, and that I love the bookending of that, of it being
Rainer,
you know, like that. So yeah, each of those episodes I think have been awesome. And I loved Wilson Cruz's different character
in Janal. Yeah.
I kind of dug that he was this like slow talking,
right?
You know, you can almost see him in Roadhouse,
right?
I kind of like that.
Yeah, he said that in the after track, he said that he was channeling Jack Palance in Curly's Gold, you know. So like that's that. Yeah, I could definitely
have that feeling. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, it worked. It worked for me. And I thought with the, you know, is it the MacGuffin and the kind of thing? I don't really care much about.
Sure. Right?
Like it does seem a little. I mean, I like that they tied it back to a TNG episode, but I'm not really invested in the puzzle pieces. It feels a little, you know, Legend of Zelda to me. Right.
Sorry, Mario. The princess is in another castle.
It feels like an RPG, which I think I should like. I think, you know, right? It feels like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
Right.
And I know at least one of the writers is a Dungeons and Dragons writer and creator, Carlos Sisco. We had him on Re-Engage. During the strike, they had not much to do. So I was like, yeah, come on podcast and talk about it. But his perspective on reunification, part one, I think, was really interesting because they had to, he was on the staff when they went back and did
reunification
part three.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So yeah, he was writing on this and making it a D&D campaign, which, you know.
Perfect.
Go for it.
Perfect. Well, let's, if, you know, no one has anything else to say, we can get into the recap of episode 4 from season 5, Face the Strange. As per usual, our recap comes from the fine folks over at Wikipedia. Forgive me for any stumbling as I am reading through it for the first time.
You got this.
Right. In order to stall Discovery, Locke and Maul infect the ship with a time bug, a weapon left over from the Temporal Wars that paralyzes Discovery by trapping it in a time cycle. As they were in the middle of beaming to the bridge after an argument about Rayner's approach to command, both Burnham and Rayner are unaffected, as is Stamets due to his tardigrade DNA. The three jump through various periods of the ship's history, including when it was under construction, fighting control, traveling through the wormhole to the future, and being hijacked by Osiris.
Pause. Right. This is covering so much ground already.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, are you recapping the whole episode before discuss?
Yes. Okay, yes, I'm recapping the entire episode before we discuss this.
I'm like, sorry, man, you're a human.
Yeah, okay. Right. One jump takes Burnham and Rayner nearly 30 years into the future, where they discover that the cost of failure is Locke and Maul's finding the technology and selling it to the Breen, who use it to devastate the Federation. Using her personal knowledge of them, Burnham enlists the crew of a version of Discovery from a few weeks after she had first boarded the ship to help successfully break the cycle. Rayner gets a new perspective on things and adopts a less gruff demeanor. However, the delay has allowed Locke and Maul to get ahead of them in search for the next clue. So now that we have gotten the entire recap out of the way, we can kind of discuss things kind of holistically, right? So the first thing I want to address is kind of the timey-wimey stuff. So how effective was the episode's use of the time loop concept? Ty, I'll go to you first. Do you feel like it was creative or repetitive? How do you feel?
Man, it doesn't need to be creative. It's Star Trek and it's a time loop. Like, that's, you know, it's like bread and butter. Like, you can have that with every meal. It doesn't. I was actually talking, like, as we were watching it for the first time, I was talking to Julia and I was like, oh, this is cool. But like, they just did something so similar to this on Prodigy, the thing where they all split across the different timelines that are going at different speeds. But then it did end up having a different twist on it. And like, I really, like, I laughed when Michael was just like, the thing you mentioned about like, oh, let's go get Stamets. And Rainer's like, why? What's his deal? And she's just like, oh, he exists outside of time because of his tardigrade DNA. And like, Rainer's kind of like, I don't really get that or whatever. But like, I was like, oh, that's like a that's just a known thing about him, huh? Like, it's just in his file, like, exists outside of time. Like, the files on all this crew are so crazy. Like, more than one of them have died and come back to life. You know what I mean? Like, but also, like, so anyway, I loved the time. Like, the time stuff really worked for me. It set up the conversation with Reno and Stamets, which was like, probably the hardest I've laughed outside of Lower Decks in a Star Trek context.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely get to that. Yeah.
And like, yeah, I was like, man, this is, you know, like, unlike Greg, I don't feel ambivalent. Like, my feelings are very clear about Mal and Locke. I hate them. They like should go away. We've kind of glossed over the part at the beginning of the episode where they are making a deal with some person for something. And like, they're always they're pretty bad, but they're always like kind of justified, right? Because this guy was going to screw them over, but they poisoned his money, like his latinum. And so there's like this, you know, there's like kind of a couple of funny joke parts of it where they're like gazing into each other's eyes. And this guy's like dying on the ground, reaching up and like grabbing Locke's leg and he's ignoring them and stuff like that. But like this whole sequence with like Maul being like, oh yeah, we got you with the same poison that like you used on my people. I'm just like, fast forward. Like, I just could not care less about like your whole situation with your, you know, like, so this episode was like, for me, a really great break from that part of what's been going on with this season and a really welcome, you know, just like not introduction, but right. Just like re-immersing ourselves in like classic Trek timey-wimey, yeah, time anomaly stuff. Like, let's figure it out. There's a part where before it cut to a commercial or not commercial, depending on whether you pay, you know, the extra couple dollars a month, where Burnham is just like, something goes wrong with one of their attempts. And she's just like looking at Rainer and Stamets. And she's like, guys, we've got to figure this out or there's like no way out of this. And I was like, I love this. Like, they're just like, they're screwed unless they like think their way through, you know, unless they figure out the situation. And like, we don't know how they're going to do it and they don't know how they're going to do it. But like, they seem pretty confident and like, this is Star Trek, you know, like, I love it. So yeah, I was totally down for all of this.
Yeah. Greg, what were your thoughts of timey-wimey? Too much timey-wimey or timey-wimey is my secret love language.
Timey-wimey is totally my secret love language. It could whisper nothings in my ear forever because it works. Yeah, I totally agree. It is a tried and true Star Trek trope to have one of these episodes or more over the course of a series. And they've done other weirdo things with the mycelial network, but they haven't done as much of this in quite this way. This is actually pretty similar to a Next Generation episode as well, with the way it's broken up and going into different times. It's effective. I agree. It totally works. And I didn't expect it. That was the other thing. I kind of felt like they used it in a more creative way. It was certainly a known thing. Once it began, you were like, oh yeah, I know exactly how this is going to resolve. And you knew that they were going to figure it out. Yeah. But it was that delicious suspense of how are they going to figure it out? Right. I was just listening to another podcast about like that technique in screenwriting, how it's like, it's suspense, but it's a known suspense. Like, you know, there's a safety in this format and knowing that they are going to get through it, but it's just finding out how that works. And this was really satisfying, especially with bringing back characters that we haven't seen in a long time and situations. And it did, Yeah, it totally felt natural within the Trek No Babble threshold that I'm comfortable with.
Dude, that was telegraphed like so clearly that it was going to be like a buddy thing that, like, you know, where Rayner learned a valuable lesson. And then even at the end, he like made it like they didn't go back and have him like call Reese in for like a sit down, like, you know, 30-minute chat, like, right, to show that he learned his lesson. They just had him be like, you know, Captain, you know, it's not lost, though. Like, I get it. Like, I got the moral of the story here.
Yeah.
Like, as did we.
Right. Yeah, Ty, I guess a good call out of the fact that this crew has been through wild things, right, where we get the call back to the fact that Stamets's tardigrade DNA, you know, keeps him outside of time. And that's something that, you know, we as longtime fans of the show know to be true, and therefore allows us to have this part of this adventure, this caper, be relevant. Where last week we had something similar where there was a call out where Book talks to animals, right? Like his ability to talk to animals was something that was pivotal to the you know, the Camo Raptors fight. But I liked it here, but didn't like it there. And I'm not sure if it was because of how they used it in the episode, or if it was just the overall enjoyment of the episode in general. I think it's I think it's probably more of the former than the latter, just because, yeah, like it made sense that it really served a purpose here, whereas all of that stuff in Janal was really just kind of a diversion as part of the diversion episode. you know what, You kind of already talked about it a little, Ty. So let's talk about Malin Locke's motivations. So do you feel like their actions were justified? And, you know, so we do get those moments of Maul and Locke doing things that you would think are reprehensible, and then they use some line like, oh, this is what you did to my people. And so it's, you know, like, my vengeance is justified because. We've talked about previously that it seems like they're telegraphing that Maul and Locke are in store for some type of redemption. Do you feel that way still, Ty? Do you feel like their feelings are justified? Do you like it? I mean, lots of different questions.
Yeah, I don't like it.
he made that very clear.
I do feel, yeah, like they're obviously going out of their way to show, you know, with the connection, like Book, you know, he's like, she's the closest thing to family that I have. They're teasing a lot with like, what's Locke's deal? You know, who is he? And I'm kind of like, I think I might be more interested when we can fast forward to that point. But this whole like tease and this whole chase thing, like, this all makes so much sense for a video game, just like we talked about earlier, like with the whole writing thing and like whether you want to compare it to a video game or like a D&D campaign. This style of like collect the pieces totally makes sense for a game or for like an anime show where you have like 100 episodes and you need to collect like shards of something or whatever. But I don't feel like it makes sense for 10 episodes, right? TV season. And it's just like a really confusing choice to me. And it seems like the same kind of thing where you have like an antagonist that eventually, you know, turns on your side. And like, if it's a video game, you're running around doing side quests if you want for, you know, 50 hours, depending on the game, before you get to that point where they turn. But for a TV show, like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, teach me what you need to teach me about them in like an episode. And then the next episode, like, let's get her done. Like, let's flip them and move on and figure out who the real bad is or whatever we're going to do. And I will use this opportunity to plug my theory about Locke, which is that he's going to be bizarrely similar to doll from Prodigy, and he's going to be the result of some kind of misguided genetic experiment from like somebody who should ostensibly be the good guys. That's my theory. And they've got a lot of room to play with, like hundreds of years to play with however they want to make that happen, right? But that's kind of my theory about Locke, is that he's Maul will be sympathetic because something happened to her people or whatever. He will be sympathetic because he is literally a creation. He doesn't even have people, basically.
I'm buying what you're selling.
And it's like, the whole, if there's one theme in the show, it's found family, right?
Right,
And you can feel this heading in that direction. So yeah, that's my prediction of the season.
I've definitely heard worse theories about better things. So, Greg, what are your feelings about Maul and Locke? Are you on the Maul and Locke train? Do you like him better than Ty?
I do not like them better than Ty. I don't really like them at all either. They have been pretty, just boring. Even this tie-in from book with it being a closest thing he's got to family, as he said,
right,
feels really stapled on. I really wish that was not the case. It's part of what I don't like about this new modern Trek, is that there's like bloodlines is a bigger thing, and I wish that for me is space opera, and I feel like this sometimes verges into space opera itself. I feel like we're supposed to be mad at them and supposed to like not like them with the way it's shot and how they're making them seem, and then this potential for a growth from them. I'm not invested in their characters enough to want them to grow, quite honestly. And maybe that all has something to do with, Michael and Book are going to adopt Maul and they'll all be a big, happy family. I just don't see that happening. Even if it does happen, I think I would be angry because it just seems too cutesy. And I think a lot of this does kind of verge into why we don't like it, is it almost feels space opera. It feels like a melodramatic instead of, especially the scene where they're murdering this guy. It's so over the top. It's like worse than Greedo shooting first in some weird way. And then, as you said, it's comical. The guy grabbing the leg. It's like, is this camp? Cause it's not far enough. If it was going to go for camp, I would actually probably be more of a fan of it. I just wish they were started in the beginning with that.
Yeah. They could have really played up the love angle. Like if they made Maul kind of more, one of them the Joker and the other one Harley Quinn, right? Then and then they could have really played up the the macabre sense of being being so enraptured with each other in the face of this kind of stuff, but they're playing it more seriously than that, and then they have these moments of this kind of sadistic levity, and
they should go more Bonnie and Clyde, go more Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis from that murder movie,
Natural Born Killers,
right? Like or the Joker and that's a perfect comparison, because that would just be fun, and they're not fun.
They're not fun.
Too
they're
middle of the road.
Yeah, they're not fun. I couldn't agree more. Let's talk about some characters that may be fun. I famously have had lots of adjectives for Commander Rayner. In this episode, the adjectives that I'd use would be positive ones, would be ones that he'd want to hear. So like, let's talk about Burnham and yes, exactly.
It's growing.
It's growth. Burnham and Rayner's contrasting leadership styles and how they worked for you in this episode, Greg.
I dug it. It was, the way you did the scene description went, it did jump right into this episode. They had their conflict.
Right.
they were in the ready room, and then it's like, boom, problem is happened. And I kind of loved that because it made it so simple. You know, it was very clear. It was, you know, for a confusing plot wise episode, they had to make this emotional journey pretty, you know, was signposted along the way. And I think it really works. There's something to this contrast. I've certainly met people like this who are like, no, fuck everyone. You got to assert yourself and put your BDE out there or no one will listen to you. And it does not work amongst a group of people like our beloved Discovery cast, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. And he gets put in his place for it. And, you know, there's something about witnessing that happen, even in the far-fetched nature, that still made me feel like, yeah, that is a victory. That is something that feels right. And for him to have learned in this way. So it was great. And I just love the bookending of her being a mentor like Philippa Georgiou was to her.
Sure.
When she had that fall from grace and her being able to do that. It's like, it's, you know, I know they didn't plan it for it to be the ending in this way, but to me, that seems like a really beautiful way to bookend this character. And you see that in this episode a lot.
Yeah. Ty, well said. Ty, what do you think about Burnham and Rainer? Is Rainer kind of growing on you as a result of this episode?
Yeah. I mean, reluctantly, it's like, okay, you took me on the ride. You know, we have arrived at the destination. You got me. You know, like I said, they telegraphed it just like so clearly what was going to happen at the beginning. And he, you know, he's just like almost comically rude on the bridge at the beginning. I would love like a series of shorts or like a video game or something of just like, I just like all I could think about was watching each different captain handle that scenario of like what to do with Rainer when he like shuts down the crew. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know what I mean? Like, it's really easy for me to picture like probably pretty much exactly how Picard, I feel like, would handle that situation. And it's really fun to picture like Sisko, I think, like depending on his mood, you know, Janeway depending on what part of the voyage they're in, et cetera, et cetera. So that was like fun. And it was almost like a little disappointing to see it. Like they played it out for a couple of minutes. And I really liked that moment where Rainer was like, you know, spare me your, I've been there, you know, whatever. He says, spare me your sympathetic bullshit. And then he pauses. And I said out loud, I was like, you can't say that, dude. Like, he realizes, he's like, okay, yeah, like I, that was too much, you know, and he apologizes.
Way too far.
Yeah. But, you know, through, like, I'll put it this way. It worked a hell of a lot better than Rainer, like, randomly teleporting into engineering to be like, hey, like I know the secret, or like I have a hint about how you should think about the secret of how to solve this problem, like in the first episode or whatever, you know. So I didn't necessarily, you know, it was kind of cliche, but like it worked, like it definitely worked. And by the end of the episode, I felt like, okay, like if they're ready to have this guy learn his like a lesson, a little bit of a lesson, then I think I'm ready to, you know, be willing to like this. I'm pausing because it sounds so like the crew is like my possession and I give people permission to be on it or not, which is crazy, you know, but like it's like, okay, I'm ready to give this guy a shot, you know, to accept him being on the bridge
on my bridge, right?
Yeah, of the Starship Hope. And that, it, just real quick, that was one thing about what Greg was saying, like you can kind of see, I thought they did a good job with him too, of like you can kind of understand like he might kind of have a point for the ship that he's been on and the stuff that they've been through and the demeanor and, you know, style of his crew. He might have a point. And she does go back at the end and say, like, I should have explained to you the way that I work with my crew. Right.
Yeah.
And like, I think that there's a valid point there too. There's no excuse for his specific behavior. But I thought there was like kind of a cool, like, I really like when Star Trek addresses like kind of like, you know, workplace relationship and how to like wield authority type of stuff. Like, I don't know. I just love it. And so I thought that was like really cool to hear them like have that conversation at the end and sort of that give and take. And it wasn't just like one person was right and the other person learned a lesson. You know, there's a little bit of back and forth there. So.
Well, you know, and the one thing that I will say is, I don't know if if more than one person was right, because it there didn't seem to be a lot of space for.
They mostly just agreed. Got stuff done. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, so Raynor had ideas and they definitely used his ideas, but where he had a vehement objection to the way that, that Burnham wanted to move forward with whatever the scenario was, he was wrong every single time.
It was overridden by like facts. Like, no, it's biometrically keyed to Burnham's body, so you can't go in there. Or like, no, you're going to age a million years in 1 second if you try and squish that bug or whatever.
So there was never an opportunity. And that, you know, and maybe that's one of the things that really upset me, was because the way that Raynor was presented to me, to us as in the fandom, was almost like an homage to the character from Picard, right? From why can't I think of his name now? Captain.
Yeah, what was it? It was single syllable. Wasn't.
Yes.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
The one that Stashwick plays?
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Captain Stashwick.
Captain Stashwick. Oh geez. Sorry, Chris. He's yelling at us right now. Everyone's yelling at us.
Shaw.
Captain Shaw. Yeah, standing on the shore. The one thing that was great about Captain Shaw was that despite the fact that he was yelling and he was really acting as kind of an antagonist to our friends, to Picard and his crew, the one thing that you could say about the things that he had to say was he was right. And, you know, and in all of the situations where he was disagreeing with our crew, right? Like, we as the audience were like, I know you're right, but come on. But
they couldn't do that in Discovery, because who would be wrong? Michael Burnham?
Right. Well, that's, you know, so that is kind of the problem that they presented for themselves. But Raynor doesn't have that ability, right? There's never that moment where you're like, I know you're actually right. But come on, right? We kind of have to infer that he means well, right? That like all of his gruff behavior is as a result of, or you know, it was exacerbated by the burn and having to command through that time, and now we're part of a different time, and it calls for different types of tactics and different demeanors that he may not necessarily possess. But clearly there isn't that space for Raynor to kind of be right, or, you know, be, you know, a little right in the margins.
Well, he's not a science guy, right? I get that too. Like, he's very much clearly like, I'm the, you know, the get things done person, right? And so I thought he got a little bit of spotlight doing that when he's the one doing the bug.
Well, he definitely got the things done.
He got to be courageous and impetuous in that way, you know?
Okay, and this question of like kind of like where he lands on the spectrum of like good guy, bad, you know, jerk, nice guy, whatever. Are we going to talk about the command code thing at all? Did you guys pick up on that? Like,
yeah, that they showed her and then she saw that
he's like, hey, if we're in the future, the Discovery is going to be able to detect that there's like two sets of our life signs on the ship.
Right.
And he brings up the thing on his like comm badge thing. And he's like, what's your command code? And she enters it right in front of him and he can clearly see it. And why would you do that in a television show if you're not gonna come back to it at some point?
Right. That's a smoking gun. That's
Like, what's he gonna do, save the day because he stole her command code? Like, that would be strange.
So last week you said that you thought maybe he was a spy or something, and I think that there is some validity to that. There's got to be a reason that, I mean, that's one thing that I said, that there's got to be a reason that he's on the ride, right? That he's in this season. And the other thing that we keep saying is we don't know who the big bad is.
It's him.
So what if Rainer is the big bad?
Because he starts off being like, Maul and Locke suck. Here's why I've been chasing them. Like, he's the one who's always been like, I am against them. And what if that has been a whole misdirect this whole time?
Right.
Misdirection. Yeah, see, that's one of the things that I really like. When you go back and watch The Chase, like, one of the things that I love about that episode is, like, Picard and Crusher just, like, hanging out, having tea at the start of their day or whatever. And the reason I bring that up is because, like, that's one of the things that's, like, a bummer for me about the way that TV is now and the way that, like, we know that these seasons are structured on these streaming services is because, like, why can't Rainer just be along for the ride to, like, learn a lesson about, like, how there's hope after the burn? But, like, because you know, we only have, like,
10 episodes,
because of the way it's structured, we know that's really probably not enough to get this guy in there and get him, like, you know, highly billed on the show and stuff like that. And, like, you know, I really miss that from TNG, how you had, like, half of the chase, I don't know, maybe more than half of that episode is about Picard and his, like, archaeology professor, mentor guy or whatever. Like, it's not, they barely even, you know, he knows what the whole genetic code thing is about. But, like, they don't get to that stuff really.
Until, late in the episode.
It's just kind of this chill, like, hey, I'm having tea with my chief medical officer talking about how my professor is aboard and, like, you know, the other paths I could have taken in life. And like, this episode actually did have, like, surprising amounts of, like, they're fitting in, like, their little moments to breathe in Discovery. Right. And I do appreciate it, but I still, it doesn't quite make up for that gap for me. Like, I just miss, like, how many times have we said, like, just give me an episode with, like, Owo and Detmer just hanging out, you know? Like, let them do the creepy yoga or whatever. Like, just let me hang out with that. I know they've showed them actually a couple, I think even in the gym, like, working out and stuff. And Owo's had a little bit. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just that room to breathe. That just,
Right? That's what it's missing, is that idea of, like, that there is a life on the ship that is extended. Yeah. Like, again, this episode, you get probably more of it than we've had in a season or two with the regular goings on of the ship. And that's why I kind of dug it, was it was for a many of these time periods they were going to, there was no emergency happening.
Right. Yeah. And actually, so one of the moments where we got to learn about some things in the ship is Adira and dealing with the aftermath of their relationship with Gray. We got another video conversation between the two of them, discussing how hopeful and excited that they are, that the two of them have been able to remain, or are able to remain friends after, you know, breaking up and kind of going off and doing their own thing.
It was a super normal and natural conversation, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't forced at all.
Yeah. So, so Ty, I'll start with you. What do you think of? Are you buying this plot line? Do you think it's necessary? Are you hoping?
Yeah.
Something else is happening with this.
I mean, like, I feel like this has been simmering for at least since the entire last season as well, where it doesn't really seem like these characters have much to do. They have character development to do, but I just don't quite get what utility they're serving in any given plot. It's cool when Adira gets consulted for science stuff, but I just, like, I don't care about their relationship. I wish I did. It feels like they're just, like, moving it forward just to get us somewhere. It doesn't, like, I'm glad they broke up, because it doesn't seem like their hearts are in it at this point. And it's really, like, it's hard. I have such mixed feelings, because, like, I love what this show is doing with representation with these characters, but, like, it almost feels like they're trying to, I don't know, like, make it so unique that it's bizarre, or like it's just like hard to identify with at all. Maybe this is just like how Gen Z people talk, like young people talk about their relationships now, and this is like totally normal. But like, I thought their conversation was like, excuse me, was like incredibly awkward. Like it's like super forced. Oops, excuse me. Yeah, like it felt like one of them was like actively lying to the other one because they were like had somebody else in the room with them or something. Like that was the level of awkwardness for me. And so like I don't understand where they could really be going with this. It feels like they're going somewhere. I don't know where that could be, but I kind of it's just like I was saying with Mal and Locke, like I'm kind of ready for them to get there. It feels like just kind of a lot of filler for the sake of I'm not sure what at this point. So like I like these characters, but they need something to do, and when they're just thrown in and kind of like insisted upon, they don't work as well for me. That's more true of Gray. Adira I think fits in as just like kind of the, you know, the learning engineering person, who's super smart, bounces ideas off of people.
This is the Wesley Crusher.
Brings kind of like an emotional sensibility to the engineering department that Stamets and some others in this show share, but that's like, you know, very different from the vibe in engineering in a lot of other Star Trek shows. So I kind of appreciate that. But like with Gray, it's kind of just like, I don't know, are we writing you off the show? Because I thought we did, but now you're still here. And like, I don't know.
Greg, how do you feel about Adira and Gray?
Kind of similar. It is a testament, I think, to what we've been talking about format here, where if this their relationship was given even like a B plot of an episode, instead of it being strung over several, like, you know, getting a scene in this episode,
right,
and, you know, a little bit more time last episode, and, you know, zero in the episodes one and two, almost, you know, it doesn't work. I think right. if they were really exploring what is it like to have a long-term relationship, kind of like what they were doing with Captain Pike and his lady friend.
Sure.
You know, where they're like, it's hard to have that type of relationship in Starfleet. And, you know, that's been a theme that Star Trek has done a bunch of times. We haven't seen it with characters quite this young before. You know, maybe a little bit of Wesley, but... Right. You know, I thought that would have been a much better thing to explore over the course of an entire episode and make it an important part of that episode rather than, like I said, these piecemeal scenes. It just doesn't feel like I'm invested.
Right.
Sadly.
Yeah. I can't say that I feel any differently from the rest of the panel about this. It is. I just want to see where they're going with it, right? You know, before I really pass judgment, but I don't have a lot of interest in what's going on, and you know, and maybe there is a little bit of truth to what you're saying, Roger, Ty, because my stepkids, when they talk, and they're young millennials, and, you know, older Gen Zers. Everything they say might as well be a meme, right? it is like, talking to the Junkions from Transformers, the movie. It's all ads of some sort, some variation. Right. Yeah. It could be a sense of like that was a perfectly normal conversation if you're 19 years old, and if you're, you know, if you're older than 26, then you just don't understand what was being said. It just sounds like English words that were mashed together. And, you know,
Hey, do they not have like texting in the future, do you think? Because it's like weird how often, like, they were like, hey, I guess I'll talk to you again when I see you in like a few months for the next phase of my like guardian graduation or whatever. And I was like,
yeah,
you're not gonna like hit him up tonight and be like, hey, it's good. You're like,
right. Yeah.
I don't get the
I mean, it's weird. You can beam literally anywhere, you know, like you could just double tap your comm badge and just wind up wherever the hell you want. But yeah, they can't seem to figure out when they want to communicate. Their schedules are just too busy. Let's talk about something a little bit more fun, in the form of everyone's favorite other engineer the crew of the Discovery, Lieutenant. I think it's Lieutenant Commander Jet Reno.
Who isn't Lieutenant Commander?
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about Tignataro and Reno's kind of return. You saw Reno in a couple of other episodes, but there were some interactions in this episode that I think were some big standouts. Ty, I know that you said that you loved one moment from Reno. What stood out to you?
Yeah, so I don't want to sleep on the part with the guns, so let's make sure that we talk about that part too. But where he's like he's like, hey, don't know when I'm going to get you again, but I wanted to run a hypothetical by you. And she's like, okay. Because, they've been working together all day or whatever. And then, they have this conversation and she's like, Stamets, are you stuck in a time loop right now? And, Stamets is not my favorite. Sometimes he feels a little out of place in the show, sure, the way that he plays the role. Sorry, I can't think of the guy's name.
Anthony Rapp.
Anthony Rapp. I like him, but sometimes it's just it just feels a little slightly off to me with his character. This was pitch perfect. I was dying. And even watching it again, I just thought it was equally hilarious. He's just no, and he just tries to get out of there. But yeah, that was really Jet Reno is the character that you're like, why are you here? And that, but then after every scene, you're like, oh, okay. I'm glad you're here. I still don't really get why you're here, but excellent.
Yeah. I mean, this is a ship. This is the science ship that does a lot of there's a lot of action on the science ship. And I guess on a science ship, there would be an exuberant abundance of engineers, so she fits right in with the number of really highly skilled engineers that we have on the ship. Greg, what do you think about engineer number 7 but also number 1 in my heart, Jet Reno?
So good. She's so funny. It makes my heart sing every time a stand-up comedian gets any accolades, but being able to be a lieutenant commander is up there for sure. And the fact that this whole scene is basically a bit, it's so good. It all leads up to the are you caught in one right now, and then playing it off like a farce, no, it worked really well. And I think actually underlining the fact that he's got tardigrade DNA was good, because I was like, oh, this is why he's acting weird, because it's not the Paul Stamets from season 1 and 2, or I forget when he got the DNA put in. I don't know when it was, but
sometime in season 2,
he was a jerk. He was a jerk, right? He was a little bit more on the Rainier side of things, and so being able to have that be the constant here, and then have him just have this scene that it's only there for us to laugh, and it worked on all that, and it worked because we're Star Trek fans, and we know that it's a trope that's used over and over again. And that's why I think the writing on this one is almost more like a Lower Decks episode, right? It rewards you for knowing information, mostly about this season, but Star Trek in general, and makes that a fun joke along the way. You didn't need that to watch it, but it gives you that extra little zing each time you're watching it, because you feel like you are a knowledgeable part of this universe, and this scene is a big part of that, right? It wouldn't be funny if it wasn't them in uniforms on a Star Trek vessel, and I love that. And she does it so well. You're right. I don't know what her role is other than comic relief on the ship. It kind of reminds me of the Carol Kane bits on Strange New Worlds, also, where I'm just like, oh, you're just there for I call them the Guinan characters because
right.
they're special guest stars. They give special information out when necessary for the plot, but you love it every time they're on screen and you cheer for them. And I think that's Tig Notaro on this series for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I do think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the other scene that Jet Reno is in, where she runs into Rainer in a hallway after shooting one of the I don't know who they were.
It was the Osiris like goons the chain or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. The broken chain. And he shot. It was some kind of chain.
It was some kind of chain. Emerald?
The emerald chain. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Because it was the green broken. Race, the green skinned race.
That's right. And she shoots the stormtrooper in the head, and she comes by, and you know, looks him up and down and says, you know, where are you from? He's like, yeah, I just got caught here training. And it's like, all right, well, stick around. I can't remember exactly what she said, but it was hilarious. You've watched the episode. You've probably seen it already. you know what we're talking about. You thought it was
badass.
Funny too.
It was bad. Yeah, there actually was a really lot of great action in this episode too. Like, I loved this bit as you know, and we'll get to talking about it, but the whole fight scene, you know, speaking of Legend of Zelda, you know, Adventures of Link fighting yourself here was fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, and let's get to that. And
wait. No, hold on, real quick.
Okay. Yeah.
So you guys didn't think it was weird because I was super distracted by like the apparently like the protocol when your ship is under attack by these guys. Like, you run across a fellow crew member. You're like, who are you? He's like, I'm on loan. And then you're just like, well, okay. Try not to get shot, and you just like walk off into the distance of the ship. Like, stick together, like formulate a plan. Like, what the hell?
No, man. You know, listen. If there's
just
one
thing, like, good luck, noob.
Yeah. If there's one thing
buy
you know,
me a drink.
Right? One thing you know about this crew is that commanders, they go it alone, man. They're going on away missions. Right, everybody's just out there for themselves, man, for all the glory.
And I like how even in universe they're so used to uniform changes that nobody even like they count the pips and they're just like, oh, it's captain's pips, not even commenting on like what is this completely different uniform that you're using. Starfleet even like
800 set like years difference, right?
Right.
You're just like, okay, yeah, there's another one.
Yeah, and in some points it was almost like a thousand, like, you know, like the discoveries. Dry dock, and the guy's like, yeah, these dress uniforms, I guess there's inspectors.
Yeah, they must be putting those out with microtransactions or something, because there's just 1,000 variants.
It's a new skin. So let's talk about our adventures through time with Michael Burnham. But before we do that, I do want to send a special shout out to Anthony Rapp and to Stamets as a character, because I think it was this episode where I actually got it, right? Like, where I actually got Rapp's performance of Paul Stamets. Hmm. Because, you know, he did play him, like, before he became part of the Mycelial Network, he was kind of a jerk, right? And then afterwards he was kind of, you know, he was like, aloof genius, right? Like, he, you know, he seemed like he was kind of on the spectrum after you know, merging with the tardigrade DNA and, you know, and almost dying, and through this episode and going through the different bits of time, you know, whether he addressed it directly. Well, you know, I was a you know, it was a little bit more ornery or whatever it was that he said, you know, before the tardigrade DNA early on, or indirectly when, you know, when you could see the way that he is acting and reacting to the crew, or to particular moments when he was under duress, you know, the moment he's in sick bay with Culber was particularly noticeable.
Dude.
But I thought it was a great performance nonetheless.
That thing in sick bay. So like that's locked in, right? Like,
yeah.
That reset. So like that moment, if I recall, like, I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to go back and watch it. I was thinking about it before this episode, but like that was kind of the moment when Hugh kind of like re-falls for him, or like kind of, right. You know, realizes, right. You know, he decides that he wants Paul back in his life, basically.
Right.
And like, I guess Burnham, like at the end of this episode, like she checked her universe Doctor Who dashboard and right. was like nothing changed,
right. No butterflies have, right.
So I guess I'll take her at her word, but I was like, wow, like that really powerful and significant moment in their relationship is now just like Paul being like, I need to help, and he'd be like, shush now.
In that shard of the multiverse, they don't get back together. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
Gotta get
to trust the dashboard, I guess.
Yeah, right. On that one.
Crossing the century.
Yeah. So, Greg, what were your feelings about, you know, Michael Burnham and, you know, kind of the whole Back to the Future, timey-wimey escapades of it all.
I loved it, seeing herself. I actually gasped when the turbo lift doors opened and it was right. her. It was like the thing they were trying to avoid the whole time. You know, they didn't make it to Back to the Future. We're like, if we see each other, it's going to be a paradox.
Right.
The universe.
It's or you'll heavy. Right.
You know, it was shocking. And I had not rewatched any of season one in a long time, and I'd forgotten how different her hair was, and I forgot mm-hmm. how different she was portraying this character at that time, right? She was full of doubt. She was not really sure of herself after this big, and it was moving. It was really moving to be like, you know, that yeah. moment of like, I know what you're going through, you know, like how many times have we said like, well, we, you know, tell our 20-year-old version of ourselves, right? It's such right. a thought experiment. And that's what Star Trek is great at, is being able to be in that thought experiment and see it play out, especially with these two, well not these two characters, but these, you know, two versions of Michael Burnham are so far apart, right? You know, right. And we see her journey, we see where she goes to, and we see, you know, the confidence that she has in herself as a leader grow over the course of these five seasons. And so, yeah, that was a visceral kind of gut punch seeing them communicate with each other and then have to devolve into fighting was hokey, but I thought it was earned a bit. Like it actually kind of made sense yeah. that they would both in this moment be so desperate that they would fight each other in this weird martial art. I'd forgotten. I was like, oh, right, because she's Vulcan. She was trained on Vulcan. Right. So she's got this weird Vulcan martial art thing that she does. And it was a pretty good action sequence. I actually really dug, you know, I don't know if it was quite Daredevil in a hallway level of right. action choreography, but it worked really well.
Yeah.
And that's been something that's been great about Discovery this entire run, is that yeah. the action sequence and the fight sequences have been really well done in this one. You know, I didn't even have that moment of like, oh, see, they took this shot from her as younger and this was her as older, and they you know, right. stitched right. it together right. like they would have had it done in the 90s.
Right.
You know, there were no moments like that. It was so seamless, and it was just, you know, these two contending against each other. It was really, really well done, I thought.
Ty, what did you think of the journey of Michael Burnham.
Michael Burton.
Michael,
yeah,
Michael
no, Burton. Michael. I just totally, yeah, I totally agree. I think everything there was really well said by Greg. Like you kind of, we've been with this character. We're like the parent who's with their kid every day, right? And we've seen her change gradually, and we've been there through those moments. But now through this episode, we get to take on the role of like the visiting aunt and uncle who see the kid every few years. And we can really be like, wow, you've grown, you know, like you're different. And he, like, even just like us describing, like Michael sees herself with the elevator doors open and then she gets into a fight with herself. Like, it sounds corny, but it really, I agree with Greg. Like, it worked for me. It felt earned. And I think there was, yeah, for me, the scene where, you know, future Michael like wins the fight and is kind of talking to like the knocked out, you know, past Michael. And it's powerful because, you know, even if past Michael could hear her, it's, she's going to forget all this. And like that message of like, yeah, like it is going to be a long road. Just like, it, like even I forgot how much this time sucked. Right. But just like, hang in there, like don't give up. I was like, man, like, yeah, that is powerful. And that's like one of those, it's one of those things in life that like, even if, like you're saying, the thought experiment, and I've always, you know, believed, even no matter what the future you comes back and tells you, like, you're going to think, you know, better as the young you, you know, like right. There's these lessons that no matter how many times you hear them from adults, even when you believe them, even when you trust the person telling you, you have to live that lesson for yourself and there's no way around it. And this episode kind of like tapped into that truth or that feeling for me, in a really interesting way. And yeah, that scene was sort of like, after this big fight sequence, was kind of unexpected and powerful for me.
And yeah, so what I'll add to this discussion is, you know, I echo everything that both of you said and was well said by both of you, but what I will add is the scene on the bridge. So we get, you know, we get these competing scenes with Rayner and Stamets down in engineering facing off against past Burnham and Reese. And then we've got present Burnham. We got present Burnham and the past bridge crew sitting there along with, I'm terrible with these names.
Arium, are you thinking of?
Arium, yes.
Yeah,
thanks. Great host, this guy.
I forgotten about Arium too, so that's totally understandable, right? Like,
yeah,
I forgot to look this up too, because I was like, oh yeah, I was going to find out when she kicked the bucket.
So,
dude, that's, yeah, this is a good scene, man.
The fact that we've got Arium back on the bridge, being portrayed by Hannah Cheeseman, Hannah Cheeseman, who was the second person to play Arium. Sarah Matich played her in this iteration of Arium, but Hannah Cheeseman, who played her to her death in season 3, season 2, was
with the control.
Yeah, was the one who reprised the role. But you know, to sit and have the conversation, and Sonequa Martin-Green does this better than anybody else. The, you know, the near cry, the, you know, I'm not gonna cry, but I'm gonna get right to the edge so that you're bawling. Like, she really has that ability to project her feelings of compassion onto you, the viewer. And you can really feel her love and her compassion and her hope and, you know, the feelings that the show is so good at evoking during these conversations.
Can you imagine a Michael Burnham talk show?
Right, exactly.
Get your tissues.
Right.
I wasn't going to cry.
Right.
I still love you.
Right. I mean, that was a great moment. And, you know, one of the things that I really attack this show for is not giving us more moments of connection with the Ariums and the Detmers Yeah. And the Reese's and the Bryce's of the world. I called him Christopher last week. Christopher is the other black guy on the bridge. The black guy I was talking about was Bryce, right? But we got those moments with those characters this week via these conversations where our protagonists, right, our main characters, the people whose names are in the beginning of the credits, get to talk about how well they know the people, you know, they know the characters whose names are not in the beginning, you know, in the opening credits. And that's how we get to view these characters. And while I get it, I still feel like it's somewhat of a cheat. But I did think it was an effective, way to use it. What I do think is a cheat is the fact that we don't get an opportunity, Greg, to really, learn who these characters are and live with these characters. And, you know, so when we say goodbye, we're going to say goodbye to, all of the people that we know, but we also know some people that we'll say goodbye to, but we don't know them that well, like some of those other people on the bridge crew.
I see. Well, we were talking about this before we started recording, right? So it feels like I should jump in here now. I just think that the main cast of Discovery did something different in that it wasn't just the bridge crew that was important in Discovery. It's a set of people that are not those ones who are doing all the orders on the bridge. Right. We still got to see those characters. We've got them like the level of O'Brien in Next Generation, or, Pulaski, even, that was only there for one season, right? Like we get those in smaller bites, as right. if they were B characters. And I totally get the criticism that you wish that they were not, that they were, you know, that the bridge crew was the A crew. But that's what I kind of dug about Discovery, was that it took a different grouping of characters, a cadet, a disgraced, you know, main character. You know, even Stamets was, I guess he was kind of always a main character, but, you know, it always felt like he was not your typical engineer. Right. He had something, you know, that weird science thing. He wasn't even, yeah, he kind of just became the chief engineer kind of by default throughout the course of it, because they needed someone to fulfill that role.
Right.
But, you know, he didn't start out that way. He started off as just science guy. So yeah, I love that about it. And I think this episode is a reward for that format, because it still worked, right? We still, even though we don't have that like love of Detmer's entire arc, or Bryce's entire arc, we got enough to make the emotional kind of, you know, language of this scene, and especially Arium. So even though I completely forgot Arium, I was still very moved by that episode. And then I was remembering, like, oh wait, she did sacrifice herself. It was a big momentous choice that everyone fought against. Even Burnham fought against her making this choice, but yeah, she made it anyway. And the tragedy of that was a really important part of that season. And I love that I remembered it afterwards, but in the moment, it makes it, the layers of it still really work, and calling back some. So I think in some ways this episode would not have been as effective if we had concentrated only on the bridge crew.
Ah, well, very well said. And the perfect episode to be used to accentuate your point.
Yeah.
Todd, did you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like a classic diplomatic dispute in a TNG episode, I really see, you know, elements that I agree with in both of your arguments here. Like, I think, like, Arium is actually a perfect example, because, like, I think the stuff with Arium worked when she did sacrifice herself, and I think it worked in this episode. But, like, I even kind of remember when she sacrificed herself, it was sort of like, man, we really don't really know anything about Arium. Right. Like, she seems cool. People respect her, you know. She's around. She's reliable.
It wasn't Data. Yeah, it was like,
yeah, different, you know. But like, the pathos definitely came from, like, Michael's reaction to it, and like the way that the other main characters kind of reacted to Arium's sacrifice, and like, but at the same time, it did sort of work. So I think
Yeah, like it is definitely a choice. And Cicero, you're putting your finger on something that is like definitely true about this show. And I think for me, I don't know if I would rank it as my favorite way to deal with the cast, just like thinking about what I was saying about like Crusher and having the tea with Picard in the morning. You know, I just love that room to breathe and that like getting a chance to get to know these auxiliary characters and stuff like that. But I also agree with Greg that like this episode had some good examples of like when that style of storytelling works, it lets them do cool things that hit hard. And it did, like, even just the ability to be like, hey, like, we're in the ready room, and every time the time loop resets, we got to go meet an engineering, because, like, there's this engineer that we all know and love and, like, is a main, like, that was cool, you know, and the ability to set themselves up to do that was cool. So, yeah, I think both, like, I really see the point. I think it worked well in this episode, for sure, I think I would say.
Well, let's, since we're kind of at the end, let's talk about how you felt about this episode and any speculations. I guess you've kind of given some clues or hints to where you think we're going. But Ty, I'll let you start first with your feelings about this episode and any predictions.
It's interesting. Like I enjoyed the episode, right? Like I loved watching it. Was the most enjoyable one for me this season. It just had the most interesting like beats with the characters, and also just the individual plot of the episode was really great. But at the same time, it like weirdly did not leave me super excited for the next episode. Just like Greg was saying about Time Zero Part One, it's like you know, like it tells a story, and I'm kind of like, okay, ah, oh man, crap. Now we got to go back to like collecting these shards of like this little map key thing to go, like, you know, like the episode wraps with them being like, we're back exactly where we started in space. 6 hours have gone by, and we like don't know where, and we have like no, we know that they were like here, and their trail has gone cold. And Burnham's like, let's get to work. And they act all like excited, and they start pressing their buttons on their consoles. And I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, you're in space, and you've confirmed like multiple times there's nothing here. Like, I'm not excited to go like try and find the Chronoton trail or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just like go to the next place with the stuff. Like, I don't know, have Rayner pull his mask off. Like, whatever we need to do, like, I just want it to happen. So like, I enjoyed this episode, but it almost like the way that I enjoyed it, like raised questions about like the rest of this season. Right. And I hope that I'm able to enjoy the rest of the episodes in this season as much as I enjoyed this one. But like, I don't know, based on the first three, I'm like kind of, I'm a little fearful that this was like almost like a blip of fun. And now we're back to the slog of Maul and Locke and the puzzle pieces.
Greg, how do you feel about the episode overall? And
any predictions? I think it is definitely the strongest out of an already strong season for me. This feels like an episode that I would recommend to someone who hadn't actually seen any Discovery yet. I would actually be like, oh, this, if you want to get into New Trek, this might be a way to do it, because the B plot of the overarching plot of this, it almost has nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter. You know, there's a bug and we got to solve it. You know, even though we do have that Maul and Locke scene, it's enough to be like, okay, these are the people who did it to him. I agree. I don't really want to go back to that story. I don't really care where we are, but I do want to give everybody who's making this show, you know, kudos, because it gave us the episode that we wanted. We want more time to just explore these characters and see how they work and how they tick without having the pushing plot going. So they got to literally put a pause button on the plot and be like, all right, we got to fix this problem or the plot can't continue. I kind of dug it for that. It almost seemed like it was on purpose that they did in that way for this. And maybe even the writers talked about it this way as they were conceiving the season, like, all right, here's a pause where we don't have any more character stuff in the rest of these episodes. So we got to make sure we have some sense of who these characters are with, episode 4. They did, and it worked really, really well. I dig it.
Man, one thing I'm sorry, I just have to slip in.
Yeah, please.
That scene where Michael is in her quarters and she's like, I gotta, and then Book walks in and he's like taking off his shirt and he's all like ripped and he's all like super nice and he's like, you were born to do this. And she's like, I gotta go. And he's like, I love you. And he like, I was just like, this is brutal. And obviously it's foreshadowing. There's more to come with their relationship this season.
Of course, right.
But like, oh man, like that was brutal. And you can see the way she responds when he says, I love you. It's like, oh yeah, she's got to get back to her real timeline and like have a conversation, you know, like there's still definitely feel, but like, yeah, I just didn't want the episode to go by with like something you said about Greg, just like the kind of the character recapping made me think about that. And like, oh yeah,
that was a really good call out, Ty. So I'm happy you did it.
Yeah, I agree, because I actually think that like in the way the recap was going, they mentioned Burnham's and they highlighted that scene where they were basically like talking, are we talking about
it's a motorcycle combo?
I was like, that's weird that they did that. I wonder if this is going to be an episode in which they revisit that relationship, and they didn't until that thing. So, and in contrast to the how they did the Adira relationship check-in, I thought this relationship check-in was very much like here, let's take the status quo of how Burnham was feeling about Book and like let's just flip it completely 180 degrees, and she's like, oh shit, I forgot that I love this dude and you know he's an important part of my life, right? And it was like, yeah, you could see that all in that subtext of that scene, even though she was like in danger of of giving away time. Also, you mentioned that there's standard procedure. I love how there was standard procedure on what would they do when there's a temporal emergency. It's like, okay, standard protocols. Don't talk to anyone and blah, blah, blah. They had like a whole list from the Time Wars, right? That they're like, oh, this is what we do. You know, so
thanks,
I love that they
Star
called
Trek
that
Enterprise.
Out. Yeah.
So,
get the manual out.
I want to say that I love this episode. In a vacuum, I loved this episode. Outside of the vacuum, in the context of this season, I really like this episode. And we, you know, Greg, you talked about kind of the filler, like this, you know, there was a lot of character work in this episode. One of our big issues with the last episode was that we felt like it was filler, right? That there was, there was, so, you know, the episode in my eyes, in retrospect, the episode Janal existed so that Adira could break up with Gray. So that, Culber could, so that Wilson Cruz could play somebody else. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that Maul could put the you know, the Chrono Spider, the Time Spider on Adira and get it back onto Discovery. And, you know, and in reality, it was just those three things that happened. And if those were the three things that were happening, Adira breaking up with Gray could have been done over a call. Right. And, and Culber could have become Janal and given them the info that they needed someplace else, right? Like it didn't necessarily need to be what it was. I guess that Maul physically had to interact with somebody in order to plant the bug to get it back onto Discovery. But those things could have happened in the second episode somewhere along the line.
Right.
And not,
I love how this bug like blends into the sleeve and it could melt into metal and stuff like that. Right. But then like Paul just like sees it like walk into the like engine core or whatever.
Because,
he's like,
hey. Yeah, because he exists outside of time.
Yeah.
Then the whole thing was that it was using time to camouflage itself. Yes.
Well, eventually it was, but like they show it multiple times, like dissolving into like, you know, various materials and stuff like that. And then like it's programmed to just be like,
when it's close enough to the mission completion. It's just like, forget all
I'm a bug. Right.
It was a very Next Generation character dead too, because there was one where there was an alien entity, of course, is a little flash of light, but it does the same thing.
Right,
They show slice of life of what's happening in a couple of different scenes.
I love the fact that we had this episode, but I wish this was the third episode and not the fourth episode, the third episode of 10 as opposed to the fourth episode of 10, because our next episode, when that completes, we'll be halfway through this final season of Discovery. And I don't feel like we know what they're really searching for. I guess we kind of got a sense that whatever it is bad, because we got to see Zora in the future and talk to Zora in the future. Mm-hmm. But we don't know who the big bad
is. They're so not nice to Zora. They're just like, oh, hey, what up, ship? Like,
right.
Open the door. Show us.
Well, I love that was a callback to that Short Trek episode,
right? Exactly.
Totally. Exactly. Yeah, we didn't mention that, but I loved, as soon as I heard that music, I was like, shit.
Oh, yeah, I thought they were that far into the future.
I thought they were too, and I kind of wish
they kind of were, because that Short Trek took place way in the future, but back when they were way in the past.
Before we even knew that they were going to jump that far ahead.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It might be worth revisiting that short trek. I think Chris knows the timeline. Of course he does. So that definitely something that is worth kind of revisiting to see when that was. I thought they did a great job. What I wished we gotten was some of the stuff that I felt like was filler from the last episode pushed into either the beginning of this episode or the end of the last episode, or, two episodes ago. And this could have been the third episode, so we could have gotten more story instead of what I'm assuming is going to be a lot of action moving forward through the season, so that we can discover who the big bad is and we can figure out what the actual plan is to destroy all sentient life in the galaxy again, and we can save the day, and then we can say goodbye to this crew. To do that in what I'm assuming will be four or five episodes seems like a lot of heavy lifting. But, we got to give them the chance to do so.
Dude, Ty, looks like. Yeah. Speaking of stakes, did you like that part where they were about to, Rainer was about to like remove the bug, and Stamets is like, no, if you do it wrong, every molecule in your body will be ripped apart in infinite directions over and over again for all eternity. I was like, jeez.
Wow.
Don't Are you trying to sell me out of religion here or something?
Right, jeez. Right. Paul.
Oh man! All right. Well,
I really wanted his hand. I wanted his hand to be permanently old.
I definitely thought we were gonna have. Yeah, there was gonna be some lasting.
Or like he would have to have Luke Skywalker android.
Something that would have. Yeah, some battle scar from that moment. We were going to have a pedantic continuity time. Sorry, Chris, we weren't able to do it. But what I will say is that this episode is the very first episode of the series in which Doug Jones is not credited.
Ooh. No Saru.
Yeah, Saru did not appear in That Hope Is You Part 1 or There Is a Tide, but was credited in both. And he only appears in this episode through archive material, which I guess they did not have to credit him for.
Interesting.
So that is all I'll say as part of the Saru watch. Greg, thank you so much for giving us both your time and your charm and your wisdom. Those were three things, and not both things, but thank you so much for doing so. Please use all the cameras, this camera, this camera, this camera, to to plug the things you're doing, where people can find you and where they can follow you, and talk about how great you are.
Yeah, awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for having me back on. It's always fun to talk about Star Trek with you, and especially this series. I'm into it. It's doing good, and good to see you again, too, Ty. I am mostly on the socials. I'm on Blue Sky at this point. I've been really into that as a platform. A lot more authors and newspaper writers and people of note without as much of the shit. So, you know, weird plug for Blue Sky, I guess. But anyway, follow me there. I'm more active about things. I do have Re-Engage.
Blue Sky at Greg Tito?
Yes, I think it is indeed. I think wanted to talk about Re-Engage. That is a weekly podcast where we're going back to look at all of the old Star Trek Next Generation episodes in order, talk about the history and what was popular at the time that they first aired. We're in 1992 right now. So when we get back to Time's Arrow Part 2, it'll be the September 1992. A lot of stuff has just happened. There were just, you know, so many things happening in the world. And I think it definitely informs not maybe Next Generation, but it certainly will definitely inform Deep Space Nine and Voyager as those writers are on this staff and experiencing what's happening with world politics in 1992. But yeah, have a good listen to that. We're, like I said, end of season 5 and about to start season 6 very soon. And that'd be great. Good to see you.
Well, thank you very much for that, Greg. And everyone, make sure you go and check out Re-Engage. That will do it for episode 109 of Discovery Debrief. And if you enjoyed it, we would definitely like you to share this podcast with your fellow life forms. And if you are so inclined, please leave a review of the podcast on your podcatcher of choice. And if you leave a review, please let us know, and we will be happy to read the review when the time allows. And be sure to stay locked in on this channel for future updates on the ongoing services of the Starship Discovery as it goes on its final voyage in Star Trek Discovery Season 5. But until we meet again, as Chris says, go boldly, my friends.